Well, good evening. Thanks for being here. So, continuing to explore compassion, the idea of compassion, the practice of compassion, the emotions of compassion, so it seems like a pretty deep topic, actually. If you were here last week, you might remember that we took a little look at some typical fears of compassion that a psychologist who's worked a lot in bringing compassion into therapy has identified. People don't really want to be compassionate towards others for various reasons, potential dangers and hazards to that. And we noticed on the sheet, as we look through those, that it points out that compassion operates in three different directions. Compassion for others is what we think of first, usually. Like we should, you know, that's like, you know, your mother's voice in your ear or something. You should be nicer to everybody, you know. You should be more compassionate. But another important part of compassion practice is receiving compassion. And we noticed when we studied this little, little exercise around it, that we have all kinds of reasons why we don't really want to receive compassion, you know. I don't deserve it, it's really a fake out, this isn't right somehow, you know. And then the third dimension, third direction, is compassion towards ourselves. And I'll just remind you what a few of the common fears of compassion towards yourself were. I was trying to eavesdrop in your conversations a little bit. And these seemed like they had some resonance out of the six or seven that we read. One, fear of self-compassion. I fear that if I start to feel compassion and warmth for myself, I'll be overcome with a sense of grief or loss. You know? Kind of open the floodgates a certain way. Maybe some of us are sort of hanging in there with a certain kind of strategy, and compassion is a little bit risky. Another, I fear if I'm too compassionate with myself, I'll lose my self-criticism. I'll lose my edge, and my flaws will show. Not all of us are worried about losing their self-criticism. Not any danger of that. Another, I feel I don't deserve, this one probably really is true for a lot of us in some way, and what I suggested last week was to notice if these kind of catch your heart in a certain way, even if half a second later your brain says, yeah, no, that doesn't make sense, don't think that, you know. But this one might be that way. I feel I don't deserve to be kind and forgiving to myself. Doesn't it have a little bit of something to it for you? Like, do I really deserve to be kind to myself? And this one's connected to the second one. It's far easier to be critical towards myself than compassionate anyway, so, you know, why would I want to do all that work, you know? So I thought over the course of the year we would, of course, study teachings on compassion, teachings on compassion from traditional Buddhist sources, being a Buddhist group and all that. But also it's useful to tie in contemporary science and psychology, and because we're moderns, you know, we can't help it, you know, that's part of our life. And so the neat thing is that there's a growing, if small, body of scientific work around compassion. How compassion works neurologically, how it seems to function emotionally, you know, interpersonally, and so on. And some science has been done already to kind of look directly at some of the sort of concerns and fears and resistances that we might have to compassion. So I've got a little bit of it to share with you tonight. I'll see if I need to send Kate back for my reading glasses or not. We'll find out. Oh, you have your own? You did? You lost yours too? Well, can you practice compassion about that? There you go. We'll see. I think I can probably read it. The light's full strength there, Scott. Thanks. All right. So one fear of compassion might be, he's got it, might be that compassion is kind of a form of self-pity or, thanks, perfect. Yeah, no, I'm good. The compassion might just be about self-pity or being too easy on yourself. Some studies have shown that people who are more self-compassionate are more likely to engage in perspective taking and realizing that they're not alone in what they're experiencing. So instead of it being like self-pity, which narrows us down, self-compassion seems to open us up, makes us more interested in our perspective and the perspectives of others. You might worry that compassion is just sort of weak and wimpy. Other research suggesting that self-compassionate people are better able to cope with tough situations like divorce, trauma, and chronic pain. And so here what they're talking about is they've developed scales, you know, to try to assess how self-compassionate you are. And there's even, you could do one of these online, actually. I can send you a link and see like how low you score, you know. It's humbling, you know. It's humbling stuff. So these, most of these studies aren't, this is early days in this work, so most of these aren't like they did a thing to improve somebody's self-compassion and then they saw the result. They're more like these people who happen to score high on the self-compassion scale also score high on these other things. So it's correlations, which is the sort of like, that's pretty good but not authoritative level of science, you know, if you know about statistics. But it's still, it's encouraging. So self-compassionate people tend to be more resilient in tough situations. You might worry that being self-compassionate is just like a selfish thing. Is it just going to make me very, you know, self-centered, more egotistical? More research shows that self-compassionate people tend to be more caring and supportive in romantic relationships and are more likely to compromise when there are conflicts in those relationships. So, that's nice. A couple more. This is along the same lines. Is compassion really just a form of self-indulgence, you know? More research showing that self-compassionate people engage... I'm misreading this one. This one's about, like, well, was being too nice to yourself just make you, like, hedonistic, you know? Just, like, encourage you to eat as much ice cream as you want and that kind of thing. You know, because, I've had a tough day. You know, I want to be nice to myself. So it says here, self-compassionate people are more likely to engage in healthier behaviors like exercise, eating well, and drinking less. And they go to the doctor more often. Two more. What if self-compassion was just kind of like making excuses? Research shows that self-compassionate people take greater personal responsibility for their actions and are more likely to apologize if they offend someone. And then the big one, which I've heard many times from people, is that self-compassion might undermine my motivation. That we have this idea that we got to be kind of hard on ourselves to be motivated. Research shows that self-compassionate people have high personal standards. They don't beat themselves up as much when they fail. This means they're less afraid of failure and more likely to try again and persist in their efforts after failing. So, this actually is written by a couple of psychologists who created a class on self-compassion. So they're not without, you know, a little bit of a conflict of interest here. But still, it's research that's been in peer-reviewed journals and all this kind of thing. So, there may be some surprising benefits to learning to be kinder to ourselves. Instead of making us sort of weak and wishy-washy, it might make us more resilient, more generous, more forgiving. And this thing about failure, I think, is really important. Do we see failure as failure, or failure as just part of it, you know? Part of what we need, part of how we grow, you know? Can we forgive ourselves when there's failure? So let's do a little exercise to find out. I have total faith in you. Don't worry. So, sitting comfortably, as maybe you already are, but if you want to adjust a little bit, I'm going to do a little reflection meditation in which I'm going to invite us to use our imagination to bring forward a few memories. Memories of things that really happened, but since they didn't happen now, we're going to use our imagination to bring them forward. And we're going to do a little kind of compare and contrast. You'll, being smart people, you'll suss out the intent, but don't worry about that. Just kind of get into the exercise and see what happens for you. Okay, so let's close our eyes and take a few breaths, kind of go into our own experience. Feeling the feeling of sitting here. Accepting whatever's here. And now I want to invite you to bring to mind a time that you were helpful to someone. There's someone else who was suffering in some way, and you were a support, you were a help. Could be somebody you're super duper close to, or somebody more like a friend or an acquaintance. But see if you can invite in your mind a time you were helpful to someone. I'll give you a minute to think of what that might be. If more than one time comes, just pick one. Just pick one to practice with. What was a time when you were a help? You were a support? And when it comes up in memory, what that was, draw the picture in your mind. Whether it was a single incident or a series or a long period, what was that like? What was your friend suffering over? And how were you a help? And specifically, what kind of person were you as somebody who was helping? How would you describe yourself in that situation? When you were communicating with your friend or loved one, what kind of language did you use? What was your tone? What was the feeling that you brought forward as somebody who was helpful? And how does it feel to bring this back to mind now? And like with all these exercises, we just accept whatever comes up. There's no right answer here. Just hanging out in this memory, this feeling, or feelings of what that was like and what you were like as somebody who was helpful and compassionate. Isn't it great that we can help people out sometimes? It actually works sometimes. Good. Now let's, with a sigh if you like, or a little shoulder adjustment, let's let that go. Maybe there was an effort we were making to hold that close, so let's release that. Drop back into just sitting and breathing, feeling the echoes of that contemplation in our body, in our heart. And now I want you to invite you to bring to mind something else. Let's bring to mind a mistake you made. Now here, modulate yourself a little bit. Don't get too into the worst thing you ever did. A minor mistake. Something recent maybe. Maybe something as recently as today. Bring to mind a screw-up, a mistake, a mix-up that you created or you were a part of somehow. In the kind of mild to moderate level of things. And bring your mind back to that poignant moment when you realized what you'd done. One of our least favorite moments, perhaps, as human beings, you know. And see if you can invite yourself as much as feels reasonable now. Don't overdo this, you don't need to hurt yourself. To feel the feeling of recognizing that mistake. And bring your mind to what you are like with yourself, as if there were two of you there, the one who made the mistake and the one who noticed. Well, how did that one talk to you? What was the tone? What kind of language was used in your head, or out loud, as the case may be? What were you like towards yourself when you were suffering, in other words, when you had made a mistake? How did you treat yourself in this case? What were you like? How would you describe that part of you who was responding to that mistake? What kind of person was that? And here we're not trying to figure out what you should have done or anything like that, but just to recognize some patterns, just to bear witness. Great, that's probably enough of that. That's with a sigh and a shrug and a head roll and shaking it out, and you can do whatever thing you do later, you know. And let's open our eyes and come back to the room. So let's investigate a little bit together. Is anyone willing to share a few words about what you were like in support of a friend or loved one? How would you describe yourself, or what kind of anything that came up there? Like what kind of language you use or used? Anyone willing to say a few words?
Desiree. I felt like I was really open and non-judgmental.
Open and non-judgmental.
Present.
Great. Listening. Thanks. Open, non-judgmental, and present, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, I was irritated. I wanted to be going somewhere and doing something else, and I was sort of stuck listening.
Mm-hmm. And you felt like you were helpful nonetheless?
I was told later that I was.
Thanks for your honesty. So sometimes we don't really want to be the helper, but can be irritating, okay, yeah.
Kind.
You're kind, yeah, okay.
I thought of the word ease.
Ease, a sense of ease there. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Truthful.
Truthful. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Straight up, kind of. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. Scott?
Feeling of connectedness.
There's feeling of connectedness there, yeah, in that moment, yeah. All right, well, let's turn it over. Oh, Chris, yeah.
I had to fail a student, and she wrote back to thank me.
Wow.
About how I'd written to her, and I realized that I'd written to her in a way that made her feel like she mattered.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh. So even in really difficult situations sometimes, yeah, you were not like everything's fine.
The worst thing of my day became the best part of my day. I got that in my back of my head.
Yeah. Compassion can be so powerful, you know, so yeah. Great. Okay, let's turn our attention to the second half of the equation. So you screwed up. How did you talk to yourself?
Mm-hmm. Pretty hard.
Pretty hard? Harsh?
Not kind.
Non-kind? Yours was kind of binary, huh? Kind? Not kind. Anything else?
At first, I was defensive.
Defensive?
Like, you know...
You're defending yourself? You're defending yourself from yourself?
Well, I was defending my actions kind of in my mind.
Oh, in your mind.
You know, and then little by little, you know, I was really recognizing what I had done and why the other people were, you know, upset and, you know, kind of like, but at first I had this sort of, like, wall.
Oh, okay.
Defensiveness.
It started with defensiveness and then it shifted.
And anger, I mean, there was anger, but at the same time, you know, it wasn't an instant recognition. You know, at first it was the closed defensiveness, you know, before I really...
Yeah, thanks, yeah. How many of you would say that you were kinder to the other person than yourself? yeah, pretty much, yeah. And this same psychology group claims that they've studied this, and it's something like 78% of people are much meaner to themselves than others. And like something like 15% are pretty even, and then there's a small percentage of people who are nicer to themselves, and I don't know if they had a way of selecting, of dropping the narcissist out of it or not, but... So this is very common, you know. Something about how we're socialized, how we're wired. Maybe there's an evolutionary basis of all this. Who knows? And of course, in Buddhism, we often are less interested in the why so much as the, well, okay, that's how it is. How do we meet that? You know, how do we practice with that? How can we be with that? And this group has a nice suggestion, I think, that's worth practicing with, a real practice. And this is from a class I've learned how to teach called Mindful Self-Compassion, by the way. And roots in Buddhism and roots in psychology and lots of other stuff they pulled in. But this is really direct from practice. They suggest that there are sort of three things that we could focus our attention on. And if we cultivate these three things, self-compassion will naturally arise. And as we saw in that research, also it supports compassion towards others. You know? So it's not just a greedy thing. If we learn to be more compassionate towards ourselves, it's easier to be connected to others. So the three things they suggest are practice mindfulness, practice having a sense of common humanity, and practice self-kindness. So I'm going to unpack those and we'll do another little exercise. So mindfulness, as we probably all know, since we hang around here, is the ability to feel accurately and with curiosity what's going on in each moment. Mindfulness is the practice of showing up for what's really here, you know, as opposed to just hanging out in your theories and your stories or being all the time in the past or the future. Mindfulness is about showing up and saying, wow, what's here? And being able to accept, right, to accept that what's here is here, because it's actually impossible to really see what's here if you're not willing to accept it, you know? You put up all kinds of blocks and you look at something else. So mindfulness is like a tuning in, you know, tuning into our felt experience. And that tuning in, when there's suffering, which there's going to be, we know that, the tuning in of mindfulness includes feeling the ouch of that, you know, feeling the pain, you know, that the Buddha suggested from the very beginning with the famous teaching of the Four Noble Truths, which supposedly came up, you know, when he first ran into his old ascetic buddies after the Enlightenment. They didn't really want to talk to him at first, but then he had a certain glow to him and they listened. But it's one of the first things he said was, we got to turn towards the suffering. It's the only way, you know. Suffering needs to be known and felt and experienced deeply. That's the first step in the path to freedom. So that's true here too. If we try to avoid the ouch, things come out sideways, right? If we try to numb or distract or pretend it's not happening, right? It doesn't end well. Happily, our ability to feel the ouch more fully also makes us more available for the joy, you know, more available for the wonder. We notice more how great things are too, you know. So happily it gives us a sense of the whole range of being a human being. So we're practicing that all the time in Zen. The second leg, they suggest, is a sense of common humanity. And this came up, I think, for us in Connie's class on anger, as did being willing to feel the ouch, right? That was in there. But wasn't that interesting the way every one of us in that group, and if you weren't here, we recently finished a class on knowing your anger and practicing strong emotions. I thought it was so impressive the way every single person kind of had their version of their own kind of confusion and befuddlement and interest. You know what I mean? Didn't you think there was a sense of, oh, it wasn't just me that doesn't get this anger thing? Wow. Didn't you think it was so liberating, just that part of it, you know? Like, I thought I was supposed to have this figured out by now, but all these other adults who are educated and stuff like that, they don't have it figured out either. Like, wow, so encouraging. But it's, yeah. So thanks for helping us see that we don't know anything. That's good. But it's true of everything, though, isn't it? You know, that when we think I'm the only one who is stuck on this or confused by this or acts like such a schmuck like that, or, you know, I'm the only one who doesn't get it, or, you know, am I the only one who doesn't get XYZ thing in technology or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. When we feel isolated, it shuts so many systems down, you know. It makes everything so much worse, you know, so much tighter, so much more like pressure. And it's one of the things that shuts off is our ability to be compassionate towards ourselves and others, right? Because We just feel so stuck, you know? And so the antidote is to actually practice seeing and realizing and hearing and really feeling that everybody has this in some fashion. You could say to yourself, just like me, you know, when you really get bent out of shape, you know, just like me, other people are reactive and misread emails, you know, whatever it is. Just like me, other people get frustrated with their employers, you know. Just like me, other people get mad at their sister, you know. It's not just me, you know. Not just me. It's a little bit like the teaching in Suzuki Roshi, in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where he talks about giving the cow a big meadow, you know. The cow kind of can't be too pissed anymore because it gets to wander around this meadow, you know. And there's more grass over there. You know, it's like we're in this together, right? So contemplating a sense of common humanity. And the third leg, practicing self-kindness, is just like it sounds. But how the heck do we do that, you know? We're so conditioned to not be kind to ourselves, as we just remembered. Just bringing up the intention is powerful, you know? Just setting it, even though I have no idea how to do it, actually, I intend to be kinder to myself. That's powerful. A useful question to ask yourself is, what do I need right now? What do I really need right now? Like deeply, not just what I feel, you know, not just the ice cream level, but what do I need right now, you know? Do I need to be heard? Do I need a break? Do I need, you know, to reach out to someone I care about, you know? What do I really need right now? And so the suggestion here, and we heard a little bit of the scientific evidence, so we need to all find out for ourselves, though. Buddha always said that, find out for yourself. Although the kicker, though, is first really practice, then see for yourself, you know. Can't just be at that level of, well, that doesn't sound right, never mind, you know, I'm out of here, right? That's not really investigating something. Dogen, whom we read a lot, says, investigate this thoroughly, right? So investigate thoroughly and then find out for yourself. So let's do one more little exercise to close. And so here again, it's a little reflective meditation, so if stretching helps you feel settled, go for it. We're just about the end of our evening here. So now, kind of as before, dropping within, maybe a deep breath or two, maybe a yawn if you realize how tired you are. And bring to mind, not like a particular mess up like we did before, but bring to mind something a little more ongoing, something that you're struggling with a bit. And again, maybe not the worst thing that's going on, but something that's been challenging you. Something that's a bit tough about your situation in life, or who you are. Some pattern that would be great if it would finally shift, you know. Some stress from the outside that just keeps being there. Or from the inside. And let's allow that reality to come into our mind, even though it might be the kind of thing we try to push away from our mind because we don't like to face our difficulties, do we? So letting one or some sense of our challenge into our mind, into our heart. And let's see if we can let it be there as we play with these three elements of self-compassion. First is mindfulness, feeling the ouch. Ah, this is difficult, right? Feeling how it feels. Is there a resonance in the body? Are there emotions swirling around this? Maybe some difficult emotions. Is there a feeling of heaviness to it, you know? Just feeling what it is and seeing if we can show up with curiosity and acceptance, like, okay, that's tough, and that's how it is. Doesn't make it okay, but it is how it is. Feeling the ouch and accepting it. And then contemplating common humanity. You might literally say to yourself inside your own mind, just like me, other people feel whatever it is. Just like me, other people are hurting from this. just like many other people, feel constrained or limited by this. Whatever it is, I'll give you a few minutes. Just to feel the feeling of recognizing that this is human. It's not just you. How could it be? Many other people feel this way. Just like me. And lastly, let's see if we can add this idea of kindness. Could I be kind to myself about this? Could I be patient with myself? Could I be loving with myself? Maybe just breathing with that word, kind. Or may I be kind? Or kindness. Dropping kindness, just that word, into the exhalation. Breathing it out, breathing it in. May I be kind. You might invite the face to soften a little bit, or the shoulders to release. What would it be to be kind? And this is not problem solving or solution seeking. It's just bringing up a hope and an intention. May I be kind with myself. So mindfulness, feeling that life can be difficult, common humanity, deeply reminding ourselves that I am not alone in this, and kindness. May I somehow be kind. What do I need right now? How could I be kind? Okay, coming out of that exercise, we can chant together. Thank you very much for listening and experimenting. Of course, these are deep topics that need a lot more than half an hour, right?